Bad ground. Bad ground, said Antaup, thumping a fist worriedly on the ancient parapet. From the roof of the tower house, Leo could see the whole valley. Stoffenbeck, nestled between two hills, a rocky bluff overlooking the river to the west, a gentle ridge above ripe wheat fields to the east.
Ground we've got to cross to reach Adua, said Jin.
That would have been easy in peacetime. Two paved roads converged on the town from either side of the hill the tower house stood on, met in Stoffenbeck's pretty market square and became one, then headed due south towards the capital. Trouble was, the country between swarmed with King Orso's forces. They'd fortified a wide crescent in the freshly reaped fields north of the town, bristling with stakes and gleaming spear points. There was more metal, along with a few fluttering standards, spread out across the summit of the grassy ridge. Squinting through his eyeglass, Leo could see men on top of the bluff as well. Wagons, too, maybe. He handed the eyeglass to Antaup.
How many men, do you reckon?
Hard to say. In the centre, they look well dug in, but the hills are weaker held. I see some King's Own standards, some others I don't recognise.
More than we were expecting, murmured Leo.
Far more than they'd been hoping for. Looked like there might be a fight after all.
We've still got the numbers, growled Jin, all northern bravado. 2-1, maybe?
Maybe. But a good chunk of them Leo didn't trust. Isha's men were well drilled, but most of the Open Council's forces had lovely uniforms, but no discipline at all. Barazin had put together what he proudly called a Gurkish legion, but he'd taken anyone with an exotic look, regardless of whether they could even speak to each other, let alone had worn armour before. A good portion of Lady Wetterland's beggarly troops had most likely joined for a set of clothes, then stolen away during the storm, taking their supplies with them. Then there was the Great Wolf, who every day seemed more likely to fight against Leo than for him.
Might be we should attack now, said Jin, squinting up at the sun. There's still a few hours of daylight.
Antaup handed Leo the eyeglass.
Our men are nearly ready to go.
Good old Anglanders, said Leo, watching their orderly columns tramp from the road and form neat battle lines at the base of the hill,
the flags they'd fought under across the north and back flying overhead. Made him proud to see them, made him proud to lead them. He scanned the fields they might soon be advancing across and caught sight of another flag coming fast towards them. A white horse on a golden sun, flashing and twinkling at the head of 2 dozen armoured men.
The steadfast standard, murmured Leo.
Antaup raised his brows.
Looks like His Majesty wants to talk.
Leo couldn't have asked for a more splendid group around him. Lords Isha and Barazin, and a good 20 other members of the Open Council, Lord Mustrad, and a dozen other noblemen of Angland, as well as Stour's man Greenway and Ricker's man Hardbread. And yet he felt very much alone, as the King's standard-bearer reined in his snorting mount on the hillside, the steadfast standard snapping majestically with the breeze, and 2 dozen knights of the body in full battle armour clattering to a halt behind. He was a grizzled old veteran with a glint in his eye and a relaxed style in the saddle, but he produced the most impeccable salute Leo ever saw. Crisp, elegant, no self-regarding flourish, the lords of the Open Council, festooned with enough braid between them to rig a fleet, could have learned a thing or two about what a real soldier looked like.
Your Grace, my lords of the Open Council, representatives on the north, I'm Corporal Tunney, standard-bearer to the High King of the Union, His August Majesty King Orso I. Colonel Gorst, commander of the Knights of the Body, I believe you all know.
Being dragged from the Lord's Round by his boyhood hero had taken away none of Leo's admiration for the man, had increased it, if anything. He was slightly hurt that Gorst sat frowning into the distance without even glancing in his direction.
Corporal Tunney?
Barazin's jowls trembled as he scornfully raised his chin.
They're wasting our time. It's his message that matters, grumbled Mustrad, not his rank.
Leo would happily have swapped a few armchair generals for corporals of long experience.
"I've dabbled with higher, my lords," said Tunny, grinning, "but it never suited me. Carrying His Majesty's standard is as much honour as I can manage."
"A steadfast standard,"
Leo found he'd murmured with not a little awe. Tunny grinned up fondly at it.
"The very one King Casimir rode under when he delivered Angland from the savages. Makes you think about the Union's proud history, all that the provinces owe to the crown."
Leo frowned.
"If men like Casimir still wore the crown, I dare say we'd have no quarrel." "Fancy that. No quarrel is exactly what His Majesty wants. In the hopes of getting there, he's invited you to dinner."
Tunny gave Leo's sprawling collection of allies a faintly amused glance.
"Just the two of you, though. He wouldn't want the conversation to wander too far from the matter."
"Which would be?"
asked Isha.
"Your demands and his possible concessions to those demands. The king knows men of your quality wouldn't lead soldiers against him without legitimate grievances. His Majesty is fully prepared to fight, but he wishes at all costs to avoid shedding Union blood on Union soil."
"He's playing for time," burst out Barazin. "I've a mind to order my men across those bloody fields and take my dinner in bloody Stauffenbeck without his bloody invitation."
Stiebling, the old lord who owned the ruinous tower house, sitting nearby with a gouty leg up on a stool, threw in an unhelpful snort of contempt.
"I'll give the orders," growled Leo,
and Barazin sank grumpily into the roll of fat under his chin.
"Please convey my thanks to His Majesty. He'll have my answer within the hour."
Tunny drew himself up in the saddle to deliver that exhibition of a salute again, then whisked his horse masterfully about and bore the king's radiant standard back towards Stauffenbeck. You couldn't deny it was a hell of a flag. Perhaps when this was over, it would have to go back to Angland where it belonged.
"We should attack at once," growled Barazin, with a warlike flourish of his fist. "Hey, Isha, we should attack!"
Some of the more aggressive lords manfully grumbled their agreement. Easy for them to say, they'd attacked nothing more dangerous than a pork chop in their lives. Isha fidgeted with his gloves, but said nothing. He'd a lot less to say on a battlefield than in a drawing room, on the whole.
"Are Stour's men ready?" asked Leo in Northern.
Greenway's grin was almost a leer.
"Oh, we're always up for a fight."
Jin frowned sideways at him.
"He didn't ask you to measure your cock. He asked if Stour's men are ready."
"They're working through the woods. An hour and they'll be at the tree line, maybe two."
Leo winced. Maybe two could easily mean three. It wouldn't be enough to push Orso back. He had to crush him. Could they do it in the lag end of an afternoon? He shaded his eyes, trying to work through the distances, the times, but there was so much to consider. His sight danced and his head buzzed with it all. He turned to ask Durin's opinion, then remembered and felt the sting of disappointment and betrayal all over again. He was the only one of Leo's friends who'd ever really had an opinion worth listening to. Such a clear thinker, such a cool head in a crisis. Why did the best man Leo knew have to be a bloody pervert? He clenched his fist.
"Isha, Barazin, what about you?"
"My men are up,"
fretted Isha, sounding less than delighted about it.
"Already deploying on the right."
"And mine are coming up,"
boomed Barazin. He couldn't say a word without trying to make a threat out of it.
"My Gurkish legion will be ready to advance within the hour."
Stiebling gave another contemptuous cackle. Leo gritted his teeth and did his best to ignore it.
"What about the rest of the open council?"
Barazin thumped his fat fist into his fat palm.
"Mostly up."
"Partly up," said Isha.
"Some are still bogged down on the bad roads."
The roads were dried out now. It was damp command and soggy discipline that were slowing them down. They'd need more time to deploy, especially with those orchards and that river ahead. But then the bluff beyond looked only lightly held. It might be better to try to grab it now than wait.
"Damn it," Leo muttered. As a captain, the right things to do whenever in doubt. Follow orders. Care for your men. Lead by example. As a general, the right things were shrouded in fog. Everything was a best guess, a fine judgment, an each-way bet with thousands of lives staked on the outcome. The decisions he'd taken in the past had always been in the heat of the moment. He'd never had time to weigh the consequences. Had his mother been right? Was he no general? He caught himself wishing she was with him and forced the thought away. By the dead, he was the young lion! But courage and a loud roar wouldn't be enough. Antaup was right. It was bad ground. Men would die taking those positions. Good men. Friends like Ritter and Barnaver killed by his recklessness. We have the numbers, he mused to himself, rubbing at his aching leg. They have no help coming.
Bunch of bloody traitors, said Stiebling, more than loud enough to be heard, swigging from a bottle and giving them a scornful stare over it.
Leo would have liked to kick him off his chair and roll him down the hill, but they were here to free the Union's people from the tyranny of the closed council, not kick them off their chairs, however much they deserved it. Mustard gave him a nod of encouragement.
The men of Angland are with you, Your Grace, whatever you decide.
That should have been a comfort, but it only brought home to Leo that the decision was entirely his. He'd always prided himself on being the definition of a man of action. Now, in command, on a battlefield, with the enemy before him, the very place he'd always dreamed of being, he felt paralysed. He found himself wishing that Ricker was there. He loved Savine, but she'd a habit of forcing her opinions on people. A subtle, velvety kind of forcing, but her opinion still. Ricker had a way of cutting through the tangle to the simple heart of things. She'd helped him see what he wanted. He rounded angrily on Hardbread.
Where the bloody hell is Ricker?
The old warrior swallowed and gave a helpless shrug.